No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you, with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Save big money on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Menards has a huge selection of concrete and mortar mixes. Our concrete products are great for a variety of applications, including pouring a walkway, setting a post, or even installing stone veneer. View our entire selection of concrete mixes and supplies in-store and on Menards.com. Plus, check out the weekly flyer for more great deals happening this week. Save big money at
Menards. Welcome, welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. We want to shout out any new listeners who are joining us for the very first time. We're happy to have you on board. For those of you who have been here from the start, you already know the drill. We live and die by this team just like the rest of you, and we make no apologies for that. I'm your host, Jason Kelly, coming to you from Canton, Massachusetts. If you want to find us on Twitter, you can find the podcast account at Bastards_Boston. Joining me tonight from Reading, Pennsylvania is Micah Storms. Micah, how we doing?
That's a tough one. I was enjoying, I think I had two straight weeks of positive podcasts. And now after this Oakland series, tough to have good vibes about this one, but I'm good, but I'm not loving where the Red Sox currently are. So, but I'm happy to be here.
Yeah. Once again, on the midweek show, the vibes are not immaculate as much as Red Sox fans hope they would be, but oh well. Also joining us tonight from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, by way of Windham, Maine, is Terry Cushman. Terry, how are you?
Well, what a weird time to be a Red Sox fan. You know, we got an interesting couple of weeks leading up to the deadline. A lot of weird innuendos coming through the Boston beat writers as to what the approach will be towards the deadline. We're going to talk about that on tomorrow's episode roundtable. It'll be all about the deadline. And, but yeah, and then you go out to Oakland, you drop two after sweeping them, you won game one. So that's four in a row. And, you know, I think we were a little concerned about, game two. And then brilliantly, I said the Bayo game was going to be an automatic win. That didn't happen, but let's just look at the standings real quick. So the Red Sox are still in fourth place. Yankees a little bit below us. Aaron Judge was taking batting practice today, so I don't know what his timeline is, but you have to think it's not going to be long. And they'll do something stupid at the deadline too. But so Red Sox fourth place right now, 2.5 games back from the third wild card spot, which I think is owned by the Toronto Blue Jays at the moment. And I'm looking at, you know, the streak section on the standings. Tampa's in second. They've lost four in a row. The Blue Jays have lost two in a row. Red Sox have lost two in a row. Yankees have lost four in a row. So the whole division right now, with the exception of the Baltimore Orioles, just getting absolutely pounded on. So the Red Sox didn't lose a ton of ground because everybody else was losing, but still we got a tougher schedule ahead, so we'll see.
Yeah, the Red Sox are very fortunate that they didn't lose too much ground because of the rest of the division. Although you have to admit what Baltimore's doing right now, and by picking up Fujinari from Oakland, who we just saw in this series, they've already added to their bullpen. They're being aggressive, and Red Sox, you know, lose 2 out of 3 to Oakland. That's still a bad sign. So they've got to get it going quick, and this series did not help. So we'll get into our midweek bottom five here. Unfortunately, we didn't expect to be doing a bottom five, but here we are. This is the way it goes. So coming in at number five, Micah, who's leading us off?
Yeah, here we are. Once again, coming in at number five is Christian Arroyo. And Arroyo was 1 for 7 in the series. And overall, I mean, if you look at his July is not terrible. He's hitting .297 with a .316 OBP. But it just seems like he goes on these hot and cold stretches for very long periods of time. Prior to the break, he was on a really hot streak. He had hits in 6 straight games leading up to the break. And then obviously the All-Star game break that can cool some hitters off. And I really thought against the Oakland pitching, I thought this would be a great opportunity for him to get going, and it just didn't happen. And you have to wonder, you know, Pablo Reyes, he can only be down in AAA until Sunday. Sunday, they have to make a decision on him because he can be down there for 20 days, and that will be the 20 day. So there's a roster crunch coming. I'm not sure Christian Arroyo should be the guy to go. I think Kike Hernandez probably would lead the pack if Red Sox fans had a choice of who should go and who should stay. But Arroyo going 1 for 7 against Oakland, and he was 2 for 16 on the road trip, that's not convincing the front office that I deserve to be on this team and have a roster spot, especially when the trade deadline's coming up, and especially when you have a guy who a decision has to be made in 2 days. So Arroyo, not sure what to really make of him. I had high expectations for him, at least offensively. I think defensively, I think people think he's actually really good. Defensively, I don't think he's anything special either. I don't think his range is good. But I had high expectations based on how he ended 22 offensively. And I think he's been a big disappointment in terms of the offensive production at second base.
Terry.
The Red Sox middle infield is middle infield hell, really. We've had so many great middle infielders over the past couple decades, and this is just about as bad as we've ever seen. I mean, Kike failed. We're just getting Yu Chang back. Pablo Reyes, I actually like him. I probably like him the most of anyone on this crew, but he's been out, and they're kind of sandbagging his rehab. Like, it sounds like he's ready to come back, but they just don't want to do it because, like Cody said, there's a bit of a roster crunch. And you know, and then you got Christian Arroyo. He's not really hurting us defensively, but he's not giving you anything offensively. And a lot of tough decisions are going to get made here in the next 12 days, 13 days. And I think Arroyo could be part of that. He's had an ample opportunity to establish himself as maybe a Brock Holt type guy. Like, he's had a chance to kind of establish himself in that role, and he just hasn't done it. He hasn't done it. Great clubhouse guy. Unfortunately, he's the all-time leader in pulled hamstrings in Red Sox history, as I've tweeted out. I don't know what to say. You know, Trevor Story's coming back, and some of these guys are going to get let go. And if it's Kike. I meant to say Christian Arroyo. Like I said, he had his chance, and it didn't really pan out.
Yeah, I think when you look at Christian Arroyo and Kike Hernandez, you're looking at two guys who they do not need to be here anymore. Once Trevor Story comes back, once Pablo Reyes hopefully gets activated and comes back this weekend, there's no need to have those guys here. It's just the Christian Arroyo experiment has not worked. This was a guy who was a former, you know, high prospect, not a number one prospect, but he was well thought of when he was first drafted. You know, Chaim traded for him when he was in Tampa still. You know, he wanted him there, brought him back to Boston when he got the job here. Arroyo always had the benefit of, well, he's still young. He's still under 30. You know, maybe he hasn't reached his full potential yet because he hasn't had the chance. This was his chance. This year was it, especially once Trevor Story went down and they announced that, yeah, Kike is going to take over short. We all looked at it beginning of the year. We said Christian Arroyo should be playing every day at second base. And yes, the health concerns are always going to be there, but if he can stay healthy and he finally reaches that full potential that Chaim Bloom and so many people believe that he has, then no problem. It just never worked out. It, you know, whether it was he went on a cold streak with the bat, whether it was his defense was subpar at times, he'll make a flashy play every now and then, which is great. But at second base, you more just want the steady guy. You know, the flashy plays are for like your corner outfielders. Like, okay, yeah, make a dive and catch every now and then. Great. I don't need Christian Arroyo, you know, doing the flashy Dustin Pedroia play. I need him to turn double plays and make the routine outs. And sometimes he's proven he can't do that. And then the health thing, just it creeped up again this year. I was joking with you guys before the show, but it's true. Every time he grounds out and he's, you know, running full speed down the line, I sit there and go, oh, please don't do that. You're going to hurt yourself. Like you're going to blow out your hammy again, or you're going to land on the base the wrong way. Like it just, it's always there. So between health, between inconsistency at the plate, it just hasn't worked out. And I don't know how much more we need to see Christian Arroyo on this team, because I don't think he's part of your future. He's not really helping you in the present. So what's the point? Like at this rate, just move on. You know, if he's still here after the roster crunch, which is inevitably going to come, then okay, fine. I think I would still prefer him over Kike at this point, because Kike is a complete mess. At least Arroyo can go on a run every now and then offensively, but that's really it. He really doesn't provide you much else. So
just super quick here. I can't remember if it was over his career or in 2022, he was hitting something like 285 against lefties. This is Christian Arroyo. He's hitting just 200 this season. And how many walks do you think he's drawn since April 29th?
Less than 10.
He's drawn 3 walks in that time frame. There might have been an injury in there. For comparison, and this is just a small sample size, this would be 15 games in 2023. Pablo Reyes is hitting 409 against lefties. So who's going to be your bench guy, middle infielder, after the deadline? Probably Reyes.
Probably Reyes. It should be Reyes. I think Reyes is the better athlete. I think, you know, his splits against lefties, you can't ignore that. You know, it's funny because, like, a lot of people like to sort of joke about the Rob Refsnyder contract extension. Like, oh, why should we be excited about Rob Refsnyder? He's done exactly what they said he would do. He mashes lefties, he takes walks, and he plays good defense. Christian Arroyo doesn't do any of those things. So, yeah, between Refsnyder and Reyes, you don't need Christian Arroyo anymore. You don't need Kike Hernandez anymore. So, yeah, in terms of just Arroyo, though, his days might be numbered, for sure. So, speaking of that middle infield, coming in at number 4 is Yu Chang, who a lot of people were very excited about coming back from the hamate injury. Obviously, he's known more for his glove than his bat. He's got a little bit of pop in his bat. He'll run into one every now and then, but he's more known as a defensive shortstop. This series, not only did he not come through with the bat, he had no hits, played all three games, did not record a hit. He did have an RBI, but that was it. And then made an error this series as well. And that defense that we all thought was ironclad and, you know, was really good with him did not show up. So, and I think it was more just, I think you really saw this is what Yu Chang is. He's a decent player, but he's a 4A player. He's really not a major leaguer. He's, you know, he's a fringe roster player on a team like, you know, the Athletics, you know, or the Tigers, someone like that, the Rockies. Like, yeah, maybe there he's an everyday player, but here in Boston, he really shouldn't be. Now, I still like him. I like him as a bench piece, but again, there is that roster crunch coming with Story and Reyes, and, you know, you've got some pitchers coming back too. So I'm not sure there's going to be room for him. And, you know, I'm not saying Yu Chang should be DFA'd or, you know, get rid of him. Like, I'm fine with keeping him in the system. He's a 26, 27 year old hitter. Like, I think he can still grow a little bit at the position, but let's be honest, he's not the savior that people painted him to be when he first came back from the injured list. And that position, that middle infield, will not be stable until Story comes back and they figure out what the hell they're going to do at second base. But I don't think Yu Chang is the answer one way or the other. Micah, what are your thoughts on Chang?
The 191 OBP is, to me, the biggest concern, because he's not contributing in any way offensively. He has power, but he only runs into one out of every, 20, 30 swings. So he's just providing no offensive production. Last year in 11 games, he hit 150 with the Red Sox, but he had a 346 OBP. So it didn't seem like he was not getting on base consistently. He was getting on base consistently, even if it wasn't via hits. But now it's like there's no hits and there's no on base, and he's striking out at an alarming rate. So I think he would probably be my first DFA candidate out of the middle infield, just because with Trevor Story coming back, I would think once Story comes back and he's healthy, he's your starting shortstop 6 out of 7 games a week. Like, he should be the guy. And I don't see a spot for Chang. I would rather have Pablo Reyes and Arroyo platoon second base than Yu Chang being somewhere in the middle there, because he just provides no offensive production. And he's an automatic out when he steps in the batter's box. And I don't know how you keep a guy like that when Pablo Reyes is, I think he was hitting like 280 or something like that, and he had a pretty good OBP. I'll take that for a guy who's going to play 2-3 times a week, as opposed to, well, if Yu Chang's in the lineup, it's either he's going to run into one and hit it 440 feet, or he's going to go 0-for-4 with 3 strikeouts, because that's what it seems like he's doing on a nightly basis. I like him defensively. I don't really care that he made an error this series. That happens. I think he's been really, really good defensively for them in his limited role. But offensively, I don't see a quick fix to get him to the point where he's at least contributing in some fashion.
Terry.
I'm not going to lie. I had never heard of Yu Chang before this season. He's barely a 200 hitter over his career. You know, he's played the first handful of years of his career, going back to 2019, actually. You know, he came up in the Cleveland system, played for Pittsburgh in 2022, only 18 games, by the way, 36 games last year with the Tampa Bay Rays. Wasn't super impressive. He's never hit double-digit home runs over his career. He was the MVP of one of the World Baseball Classic rounds for Team Taiwan. Excuse me. I don't know what group they were in, but he had some moments in the WBC, but like Micah said, I mean, if he goes first, that's fine. That's fine with me. Looking at his splits, he also hits lefties a lot better. He's a 250 hitter against lefties, 167 against righties. So I would probably still prefer Pablo Reyes over Yu Chang. Who knows where Bloom's head is at with that, but you can't platoon him with Reyes if they're both better against lefties. It would make more sense if Chang had much better numbers against righties. But it's just, it seems like every middle infielder we have hits lefties better than anything. So I'm not a big Chang guy, but it's still, you probably win more games with him at shortstop than you do with Kike Hernandez. And when Kike's having a bad game, sometimes it rubs off, you know, then Casas starts making mistakes, and it just adds a level of anxiety when Kike's out there, and, you know, it just leads to a domino effect. With Chang out there, I guess he did have an error in this series, but for the most part, it's been pretty smooth. That's about all I can say about him.
Yeah, I mean, he did make an error, but that glove has proven to be at least somewhat more competent than Kike Hernandez, who, what does he have, 16, 17 errors on the year? So, you know, yeah, we'll see. Maybe his glove keeps him here, but who knows? Moving to the other side of the diamond, number three on the list, Terry, who do we got?
I am going with Joe Jakes in the three spot this week. He was the opener for game two. It was a clean first inning in terms of nobody came across home plate. He did give up a leadoff triple to Tony Kemp, who has some wheels and, you know, can get around the bases. But other than the triple, gets out of the first without giving up a run. Second inning doesn't go so well. Ryan Noda, who last I checked leads the American League in walks, by the way. He homered, hit his 11th home run to lead off the inning. That put Oakland up 1-0. And then next batter, Aledmys Diaz, hit a single. And then one of my favorite names to say, it just flows well off the tongue, J.J. Bleda hits a 2-run shot. He's had some impressive moments throughout both series against Oakland. And so that was a 2-run shot. Oakland goes up 3-0. And that was it for the rest of the game. No more scoring. Red Sox didn't put up a run. Oakland didn't score again. But, you know, it wasn't a good opening situation for the Red Sox. And we haven't really been getting hurt with the opener. Brandon Bernardino has been very good in that role, and he's been very good in every role, by the way. But really, since Caleb Ort got tossed, you know, or optioned, is that me? We're getting some bad feedback here. Oh, it's gone now. Apologize to the audience. Where was I? Basically, since Caleb Ort got optioned down, the opener role hasn't really hurt us. You know, what's happened after the opener, you know, has, but not a good outing by Jakes, and I hope we don't see him in that role again.
Micah, thoughts on Jakes?
I think it might be my mic. I think I'm am I buzzing?
No, it's doing its normal. Oh, actually, yeah. That's your mic.
Jason, why don't you give your take on Jakes, and I'll try to figure it out. Sorry about that.
Yeah, we'll circle back to Micah in a little bit. Yeah, I mean, the Red Sox have been lucky with the opener situation because that shouldn't work, especially for this team, the way it was meant to be constructed. It wasn't meant to be a team that needs to rely on openers. That's why you paid Corey Kluber $10 million, because you thought that he would be pitching in your rotation, even at the back end, even if he was giving you Nick Pivetta-type numbers, not the Nick Pivetta we saw this week, but the regular Nick Pivetta of, you know, ERA 4.5, you know, out of there by the sixth inning, gave up 3 or 4 runs, but hey, at least he kept you in it. That's what they were expecting. Now we're seeing guys like Joe Jakes, who is just, again, another 4A player, if you can even call him that. I mean, the guy's 28 years old. We're not talking about a prospect here. We're not talking about Chris Murphy, you know, who's you know, sub 25, like maybe has a shot to become something. No, this is a guy who's, if anything, he's a back end reliever that you put in when you're up by 7 runs, and he's opening games for you. So I don't know why the Red Sox expected that to work. The Bernardino-Pivetta combination seems to be working, so that at least is good, but they've got to figure out something else in terms of who to put in front of Chris Murphy, because Joe Jakes is not the answer. And the more that they have to rely on him in that role, just the worse it's going to get, because there's only so much luck you can press with a guy like that. And it got exposed this week. It didn't work for them. So, like I said, like you said, Terry, hopefully it's the last we see of him in that role and they figure something else out, because that was not fun. Micah, your thoughts on Jakes?
All right, I think I'm good now. Sorry about that. To me, I don't know why Cora tried to push the issue on Jakes. I think you got one inning out of him, and I think they should have tried to be more aggressive with Murphy. They probably thought, well, it's the Oakland Athletics. Let's see what we can, you know, if we can get another one out of him. But after he gave up the first home run, like, you already got a scoreless first inning out of Jakes. I think that was more than enough. And if you look at his splits, he actually has reverse splits. Lefties are hitting 455 off of him. So if lefties are smoking him, what value does he really have? Righties are hitting 257. There's no batter he can really go out and dominate against. So I just don't see, to me, this is another Garza. This is a Caleb Ort type pitcher that you're trying to get something out of him, but he's just not capable of getting even the Oakland Athletics out. And that's the by far the worst offense I have seen all season long. And if he can't get them out, you know, how's he? I don't know how he got that save, that scoreless 1-2-3 inning in Toronto. Like, did that really happen? I almost have to like rewatch it to believe that that actually happened. But I don't think he's long for this bullpen. He's another Bloom find that you're throwing a dart at the wall, hoping it sticks. And I don't see this one sticking at all.
I agree. And those splits are alarming for a guy who's a lefty with his arm slot, because he does have a weird sort of different delivery. That's usually, you know, deceptive and is tough for left-handers. It's clearly with him, it's not. So it shows you that his stuff just isn't good enough, no matter what kind of arm slot or delivery he uses. So that should tell you all you need to know. Speaking of left-handers, left-handed hitters this time, Micah, who's coming in at number 2 on the list?
Coming in at number 2 is Alex Verdugo. It was a really tough series for Verdugo. He was 1-for-11. And if you just watched him in the batter's box, he really looked defeated. He had a check swing strikeout today on an inside slider. It was a really good pitch, but he chased it with 2 strikes, and he just doesn't look locked in at all. He really hasn't looked locked in for quite some time. Even the go-ahead home run in Toronto, he said after the postgame, in the postgame interview, I haven't been swinging it well, but I put a good swing on that ball. But I went back and I looked at his last 15 games. He's hitting 161 with a 238 OBP. And then I went back and I looked at one other thing. You know what he's only done one time in the last 15 games? Lead off.
Oh, lead off.
Lead, lead off. And that, to me, he was cruising as the leadoff hitter of the Boston Red Sox. And he just was a tone setter. It felt like every inning, every first inning, he either hit a double or he walked. And it really got the offense going. And now that Jaron Duran has really emerged as a big, big time producer in the lineup, they've put him at the leadoff spot. And I know Alex Cora said a couple weeks ago he really likes the ability to move Verdugo around the lineup. And Verdugo said he doesn't mind it. But the production, I don't think you could ignore the results lately. He's just not himself. He's striking out more. And I don't know. It makes me wonder. You have a really good thing with Verdugo as the leadoff hitter. And it's hard to find good leadoff hitters. And I think Duran can do it. But I wonder, you know, would Duran be better in that 5-6-7 hole, kind of in the middle of the lineup, starting things over again? I wonder if that would be a better spot, because we've seen Duran have success in the middle or the bottom of the order. He did that for the first six, 8 weeks that he was up. I wonder if putting Verdugo back at that leadoff spot, you know, just that familiarity, if that gets him going again. But they need him to go. He's kind of the catalyst on this offense. And you notice when Verdugo is cold. He's a guy who has a ton of energy, and I think guys feed off of him. And right now he is not playing with a lot of energy out there. And we talked a couple weeks ago about, could the Red Sox trade him? If he has another tough 8 or 9 games here before the break, I don't know what type of value he has leading into the trade deadline, if that's an option, because he could go 25 games where he's hitting 150. I don't know if you're going to get the return that we once thought he could get, you know, a couple weeks ago.
Terry.
I don't hate Verdugo in that leadoff spot, and I agree he seemed to thrive in it and really embrace the role. But I think with the emergence of Duran, you're getting a double most of the time compared to a single for Verdugo. So I think that's just too hard for Alex Cora to pass up. And quite frankly, I mean, some of those should be singles. Duran is just a maniac out there and can just stretch it to a double. And especially outfielders not in the AL East with a little bit more familiarity with him, they're just approaching it routinely, and you're not seeing urgency on their part to get the ball into second base. And I think Duran has taken full advantage of that, to his credit. So I don't know if we'll see Verdugo in that spot. He did hit pretty well, though, after the month of May last year, moving around quite often. And I think he had more at-bats last year in the five hole, believe it or not. And that was still with J.D. Martinez and Xander Bogaerts in the lineup. And Verdugo was still thriving in that spot. And I think he was brought up to the 1-2 hole at various points. But it's interesting. I mean, he's not a guy who's truly gotten cold all season. This is probably his first big cold streak. So hopefully he gets out of it. I did talk on, I think it was the Totally Legit or Calling the Cops episode. I think Verdugo, I think there's a 25 to 30% chance he gets traded. I really do. You look at all the lefties. We are too lefty heavy, and I complained about that all winter. It's just, you're really flawed, and you're never going to have a set lineup. And you look at Duran, probably not going anywhere, you know, anytime soon. Rafi Devers, not going anywhere anytime soon. Tristan Casas almost has his batting average up to 240. And that's like 350 to me. That's high compared to where he was, you know, hitting like a 170 for a while. But Casas probably not going anywhere. And I think I'm missing one more. Yoshida not going anywhere. So you're going to probably, going to want to make a move to get, you know, to get a little bit more balanced on the right side. And I think Verdugo makes the most sense. Having said that, would I still extend him? I would be fine with that. You know, it still, like I said, it complicates things. I like Alex Verdugo, but realistically, you need to get more balanced. And I'm only putting it, like I said, at 25 to 30%, but I think that's high. I think that's high, a high percentage chance, really. So we'll see. But he's definitely cold, and if he's not hitting, you know, he doesn't have to be hot, but, you know, if he's not hitting at a decent clip, hard to win baseball games.
You guys brought up a lot of good points about Verdugo, and I think it's all very much directly correlated. These last couple of weeks, you know, Micah, those stats over the last 15 games, I mean, there's a couple of other things that have happened. So, you know, you guys mentioned it. Red Sox are very lefty heavy. And the lefties that they have, Devers, Casas, Yoshida, as you mentioned, Terry, they're not going anywhere. The other thing that's happened over the last week plus whatever is that the Alex Verdugo extension talks have pretty much gone silent. And the Brian Bello extension talks have taken over. Now it's, you know, Cotillo and everyone else is writing about, oh, they should extend Brian Bello. Yeah, Brian Bayo's the guy that they should approach in the offseason for an extension. Not Alex Verdugo. We've been talking Alex Verdugo extension on this show. We were talking about it in June. I think some people in the Red Sox media were talking about it in June because he was red hot and, you know, he was the guy that we were all latching onto. But that's died down a little bit, especially with Brian Bayo doing what he's done and with Jaron Duran emerging. Now Jaron Duran is everyone's favorite Red Sox outfielder next to Yoshida. So, and let's face it, we know that Verdugo is an emotional guy. He wears his emotions on his sleeve, and that's a good and a bad thing. I think that that's starting to get to him. I think the fact that, you know, there's probably not been too many extension talks between him and the Red Sox. It seems like there has barely been any at all. And now he's hearing all this noise about Jaron Duran's a perfect leadoff hitter and Brian Bello deserved an extension. And he's sitting there going, I was the best hitter on this team in May and June. And now it's all Duran. It's all Bello. And they're moving me left and right, you know, all these places through the lineup. I think it's starting to bother him just a little bit. And I think that those trade talks about Verdugo is your best trade piece, those aren't dying down. The extension talks died down, but the trade talks have not. His name keeps coming up. And I think he's a guy who his brother is very active on social media. Like, I think he hears a lot of that. So I think Verdugo is starting to kind of hear the footsteps of Duran taking his spot as a leadoff hitter. And I think he's looking on Twitter and he's seeing that his name keeps popping up. You know, he keeps being linked to the Astros as, you know, oh, that's the perfect trade between the two teams. I think that's starting to bother him. And for a guy like him who plays with a lot of emotion, again, good and bad, but he does play with a lot of emotion, I think it's starting to drag him down a little bit. And I think that's why you're seeing him in this slump. So I don't know what the resolution to that's going to be because, you know, we're closing in on that deadline. And we'll talk a lot about that on our roundtable episode this weekend. But yeah, it's I think that stuff's starting to get to him a lot. Micah, any other thoughts?
Yeah, Jaron Duran has been the you have to sit him against a left-handed pitcher. And Jaron Duran is hitting 270 against lefties. To me, that's really not that bad, especially for a young hitter. And we know how productive Duran is with his legs, whether he hits a ground ball or if he walks, and he just creates havoc. Alex Verdugo is hitting 238 against left-handed pitchers. So when you look at the splits, who really should probably be sitting against a lefty? You know, when you have Adam Duvall still on this team, who knows exactly what this roster, what the outfield's going to look like once the trade deadline comes. But right now you have Adam Duvall, who I'm perfectly fine if he hits against left-handed pitching. I feel comfortable with him against lefties. But if you're going to put Duvall in, I think there's an argument to be made that Duran should be in right field and Verdugo should be the guy who sits at least once a week against lefties and give Duran a chance, especially with the 161 batting average over the last 15 games. I think Duran, I don't know why he got put into that platoon role right away. It's like a lefty's on the mound, you can book Duran's on the bench. 270 against a southpaw, that's probably better than league average, significantly better than league average for left-handed hitters. So I think that's interesting. But I'm not sure Alex Cora would have the guts to do that on a consistent basis.
If Adam Duvall is still on this team after the trade deadline and the Red Sox decide to go with exactly what Micah suggested, where it's Duvall in center, Duran in right, and Alex Verdugo gets traded, how would you guys like it? Is that okay by you guys given where they are now, or would that be just ridiculous? And would it, you know, in like Terry, in your case, would you want Bloom out of here even more?
the thing that makes me nervous is Bloom doesn't win a lot of trades. So what's the return going to be is the thing. It would probably be prospects, because a team that's taking on Alex Verdugo isn't going to want to weaken their rotation to give us the starter that we need. So I don't like anything. This is, like I said, a very uncomfortable time to be a Red Sox fan. And if we go into full-scale sell, we'll see what happens. But I think, like I said, I do want balance, though, to answer your question. You know, I'd like to have, ideally, two lefty outfielders, two righty outfielders. And Story's coming back, so you got one righty middle infielder, and who knows what's going to happen at second between now and free agency. Probably nothing, really, because you got Meyer maybe coming up in the second half of next year at the earliest. I'm not sure what Nick York's timetable is, but, you know, he's a middle infielder. So, yeah, we're probably not getting much, you know, but I'm just – I don't like anything right now.
Fair enough. Yeah, fair enough. And like you said, we do need another starter, particularly with what happened this week with our new ace. So that will lead us to him, Terry, who's number one on the list this week.
Well, that will be Mr. Brian Bayo, and I'm not going to hammer him too hard because, quite frankly, he's exceeded all of my expectations so far for 2023. I did call this an automatic win, so perhaps I jinxed it. You need to win two out of three against Oakland at a minimum. Like, you need to bank those wins, like I said earlier in the show. And I was surprised. I mean, I was working for most of the game, and it was already 4-2 when I checked on it for the first time, and Oakland had put up the four. But, you know, he was basically in trouble right away. You know, Tony Kemp hits a single. J.J. Bleday, again, my favorite name. Hits another home run that puts the Red Sox, that actually tied the game, actually, because Red Sox put up two that inning. But so tie ball game, second inning, let's see, no runs scored there. He gave up three home runs that were all two run shots. So it was pretty costly. Cody Thomas, who I'm not familiar with, might be a rookie, hit his first home run of his career today off of him. That drove in Jace Peterson. And I want to say it was Peterson that got the final home run there. But it was Jace Peterson in the fourth inning. So got tattooed by the worst offense in baseball. So not something I saw coming, but we have seen Bayo make adjustments and a lot of the times make them in the games and pitch very effectively. So I think it's a blip. I'm not really a pessimist on Bayo. He's going to pitch, let's see, is Atlanta after the Mets? So he'll pitch against them. That'll be, if he bounces back against that Atlanta lineup, which is probably one of the best in Major League Baseball. I mean, we all agreed last week that Atlanta right now would be the favorite to win the World Series. If he can bounce back against that lineup, that'll be a very good sign.
Agreed. Micah?
Yeah, I agree with Terry 100%. I was shocked that Oakland was, of all teams, to hit three home runs against him. We have seen the home run ball kind of get him now on the road trip. I think he gave up two against Chicago. I think Cody Bellinger got him twice. And then today, three home runs, so five in the last two starts, something that we just haven't really been accustomed to with him because he's a ground ball pitcher, and that sinker and changeup combination is fantastic. But all pitchers have bad outings. It just kind of happened at a bad time, and unfortunately you don't get to choose when you have a bad outing. I tweeted this morning that every time the Red Sox need him to have a big start, and it seems like every start he makes, he's really, you know, risen to the occasion and produced, and today it just didn't happen. But I don't think this is any type of concern. To me, the thing that I was watching, I don't know if you both had an opportunity to watch the entire game, but he was coming off the mound in between. They were showing him, and he had his hands on his head, and you could just clearly tell he was frustrated, and which is fine. But there's been other outings where he's also not had his location right away, and he kind of had to feel for it. And we didn't see those type of reactions from him. And it really felt like once that home run happened in the first inning, it just felt like he was defeated. And I don't know. Maybe that's just, you know, an observation from TV that isn't really accurate. But I don't think we've seen a frustrated Bayo. Maybe the only other time I can think about was when he didn't get over to cover first base against the Angels and Alex Cora went right out there and kind of put an end to it. But I was a little surprised to see him come off the field. I think he did it two or three times in a row where he just was visibly frustrated with himself. And I think sometimes we forget he's still only 24 years old. He's really, really young and he's learning. And he's learned at such a fast pace, way faster than I thought he was going to. And I think there's still some maturity left that we're going to still see some growing pains. And today was a growing pain. Unfortunately, it happened against the Athletics in a game that you really could not afford to lose, because losing 2 out of 3 to Oakland is just not a good message to send to the front office around the trade deadline. So a bad time for a bad start, but I'm not concerned with Bayo moving forward.
I tend to agree that I think this was a blip on the radar. I'm glad that, Micah, you brought up the histrionics, the demonstrative nature in which he was coming off the mound. I did notice that too. He was, you know, hands on the head. He was barking at himself on the mound after giving up home runs. The last inning before they took him out, he threw, you know, just spiked his glove into the dugout, full on Chris Sale mode. I wasn't sure whether or not to paint that as immaturity or that competitive, like the crazy, like Max Scherzer or Chris Sale, like I'm so mad that I gave up 3 home runs to this bum ass Oakland team. Like, and I tend to lean towards the latter. I think it was just, he was frustrated because he didn't have his best stuff. He wasn't sharp. I mean, you're giving up home runs to Jace Peterson and Cody Thomas. I mean, J.J. Bleday at one point was a top prospect for the Marlins. Like, he's a pretty good player. Chase Peterson, I mean, that was his sixth home run of the year. Cody Thomas is a 28-year-old rookie who hasn't done anything, and he just hit his first big league home run off of you. So I think it was more he was just really, really aggravated and frustrated. And I think a lot of it is there's a lot of pressure on him, and unfairly there's a lot of pressure on him because – even on this show, we've said, look, this guy's your new ace. And that's not fair to him. And that's way, we acknowledge way too much pressure to put on a 23-year-old. But that's where your team's at right now. Because the guy who everyone thinks is your ace, Chris Sale, is not anymore. I mean, it just in terms of health and ability, he's not. James Paxton has been pitching like an ace this year, but he's probably going to be gone in a few weeks. Garrett Whitlock's not it. Tanner Houck's not it. This is your guy. So I think that the weight of that pressure is kind of catching up with him a little bit. He knew that even though he was pitching against Oakland, which is a bad team, you know, in a huge ballpark where he has a lot of space to work with, he knew that this was a must win. And that shouldn't be the case. You shouldn't be having must win games against the Oakland Athletics in mid-July, but that's where this team is. They're on a teetering point now because they don't know. Those guys in that clubhouse, they have no idea what the front office is going to do to them in the next 2 weeks. And they know that they've got to win these games. So it was just a lot of pressure on him. And I think that, you know, he gave up that home run in the first inning. And I think he just kind of felt like he didn't have it and was frustrated. And, you know, he's still young. He's like 23. So he doesn't know how to channel that properly. Like, and I hate to keep bringing up Pedro Martinez. It's so unfair. But when Pedro would get frustrated, he would come out the next inning, throw a 98-mile-an-hour fastball up at a guy's chin, and then strike him out the next three pitches. That's how he channeled his frustration. Brian Bello is just too young, and he hasn't learned how to do that yet. So he goes out there the next inning and tries to execute his game plan, work with his pitcher, or work with his catcher, and figure out, okay, let's get back on track. And he just wasn't able to do it because his stuff wasn't there. So I chalk a lot of it up to frustration. But at the end of the day, it still wasn't good enough. It was not what the Red Sox needed against a bad team that they needed to take this series, especially with the day off afterwards. You're going up against the Mets. I know the Mets have been a train wreck this year, but, you know, they're still going to provide a tough challenge. And his next start will be against the Braves. So if you're giving up home runs to Jace Peterson and Cody Thomas, what are you going to do against Acuna, Austin Riley, Matt Olson? I mean, that's a big, you know, bounce back challenge for him. So hopefully it was a one-off. Hopefully it sparked a fire in him. Hopefully he talks with Alex Cora, Dave Bush, whoever he needs to talk to, maybe even Pedro. I don't know. Maybe he just talks to Pedro too and says, you know, what the hell happened there? And he figures it out, because that next start against Atlanta, that's going to be a mountain for him to climb. And I think we're going to learn a lot about Brian Bello when he faces the Braves in that next start.
Just a couple observations here. Number one, Nick pointed this out on our YouTube channel, which everybody should check out, by the way. Bayo's ERA splits are drastic when it comes to day games and night games. At night, he's pitching to like a 2.39 ERA. During the day, it's over 7. So just a weird thing. It's still a relatively small sample size. Doesn't necessarily mean anything. The other observation that just kind of came to mind while you guys were giving your takes, what was the big topic all week regarding Bayo?
Extensions.
Could that be noodling around in his head while he's trying to locate his changeup? I don't know. So that kind of bears watching. I don't think we would hear about a Bayo extension until the winter anyway, but still, you know, that can play a factor. We saw it affect Bogaerts to, I think, a pretty significant degree. So we'll see. Micah has something.
Yeah, I never across my mind until you brought it up, Terry. I find that very interesting because we talked about it, I believe, last week or 2 weeks ago, something like that, about Bayo and an extension. So that is an interesting point. I also wonder, because I know I feel it just watching the games whenever Paxton, Crawford, or Bayo pitches, because they're using two bullpen games, it feels like when those three starters are going, you absolutely need at least five, hopefully six innings out of them. And I wonder, do they kind of feel that as well? Like, I'm out here, the bullpen is absolutely taxed after two straight bullpen games. I have to go out there and give six, seven innings. And Bayo's done that probably over the last, I think he's averaged almost seven innings in his last eight starts prior to today. But that's not a realistic expectation, especially for a 24-year-old who is really experiencing his first big league season. I think the bullpenning and the openers, I think it can kind of play mind games on those other starters and put a lot of extra pressure on them to just be better than they need to be.
Yeah, absolutely. And you have to wonder if the hook that he got tonight or this afternoon rather upset him also, because he's sitting there going, it's 6-2. Like, okay, yeah, it's 4-run difference, but this is Oakland and, you know, this offense can score runs. Like, don't take me out yet. I can figure it out. I can settle down and we can still win this game. I wonder if that also played into his mind. Like you said, you know, stressing the bullpen more, he's probably sitting there going, no, you don't need to. Like, I can figure this out. Just give me a shot to do it. And maybe that's where Alex Cora made the right move, knows that it's a young kid. You know, I'm not going to stress him out any more than I have to, even though it might mean we lose this game. Granted, they lost the game because the offense couldn't rally, frankly. Bullpen did fine. But yeah, I wonder if that played into it too, where he just said, really, you know, I get it, six runs, but you know, take me out and, you know, leave it to the bullpen who's been taxed. Like, so I think a lot of that frustration came forward. And yeah, I think, again, it's all the pressure of just not only what's expected of him now, but with the bullpen games, you know, and with all the injuries that, you know, they've sustained to their pitching staff. Like, I think it all came boiling up. So tough to see, but again, we all just hope blip on the radar. And yeah, that next Brave start is going to be a big one for Bayo. So, but unfortunately, tough series for the Red Sox to drop 2 out of 3 to the Athletics. But that's the way it goes. So we're going to wrap on that. We will be previewing the Mets series coming up. That'll be our next episode. That's coming up this weekend. Red Sox have an off day on Thursday. They'll play the Mets Friday through Sunday, including a Sunday night baseball special. So we'll be previewing that. And then we'll have our roundtable episode coming out this weekend as well. We'll be talking trade deadline, maybe a little bit more Alex Verdugo trade talks.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.